The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Canceled Too Soon, the podcast where we review television series that lasted only one season, or perhaps less. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. I write for The Wrap, and everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am senior staff writer over at Slash Film. I don't have a cute nickname for this podcast, but I did watch a cop drama with John Denver.
That's what counts, really. Here at the Cancel Too Soon podcast, we like to talk about the big shows. We just did Star Wars, The Acolyte. Everyone remembers it. Everyone heard of it. But what we really treasure is digging up the stuff that nobody remembers, has been swept aside by history, has kind of vanished from the ether. And we found a cop show starring John Denver.
As the cop.
As the cop. As the tough-as-nails cop beating people up. John Denver.
John Denver.
This is higher ground.
Hiya, Tommy.
Go away.
Come on, pal. Is that any way to talk to your friends?
Dad's friend, not mine. Go away.
You're right, Tommy. I was your dad's friend. You know why I was his friend? A lot of reasons. He saved my life once. Did you know that? There was a thief with a gun, wanted to kill me. Your dad saw him before I did, took him right out.
He did?
He didn't worry about the gun. He didn't worry about getting hurt. It just took him right out.
I remember a bit from Richard Jenny, the stand-up comedian that I very much enjoyed.
Yeah.
About how he noticed that whenever he goes through like a bad breakup or something, or something really hard in his life,
yeah,
he turns on the radio to relax. He wants to listen to music. But by coincidence, that's when they start playing like all of the torch songs and the love songs, all the things that make you feel worse about your situation.
Well, the irony is they play that all the time, but you only really feel it when you're breaking up
exactly.
with somebody. Because it's all the songs are about breaking up with somebody or longing for somebody. It's
so
his, fucking awful.
His solution is you need to get listen to your car like Ethel Merman's Christmas CD, like something really brassy and ridiculous, and his solution was you need to go see John Denver in concert. Go see John Denver, and his reason was because he's gonna snap soon, and you're gonna want to be at the concert when he does. He's gonna come out with a mohawk and like tattoos and nipple rings, and he's just gonna start singing about killing people. And the joke, of course, is that John Denver is the gentlest human being alive.
Mm.
He'd step on an ant and cry.
He seems like a very sweet man.
Yeah.
He really does. He has this like Cousin Oliver haircut that looks like he's just like his mom picked that out for him when he was a kid and they never changed it.
He was friends with the Muppets.
Friends with the Muppets.
And the Muppets needed to be gentle with him. I feel like, they didn't want to hurt his feelings.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Let me fill up your senses. And, he's saying this, he had this kind of a very kind of high light baritone singing voice. He strummed an acoustic guitar.
As country singers go, there wasn't any gravel to his voice. He wasn't telling really dark or even funny stories, Merle Haggard or Bobby Bear or something like that. No, he was uplifting.
Yeah, take me home, country road. It was very gentle, easy to listen to. Some might say wimpy music.
But you know what? I'm going to say something right now. And John Denver is the kind of person who, the kind of entertainer, who when you're young, mm-hmm. you might not think is cool. Oh, it's John Denver. My parents listen to John Denver.
When you're a little kid, he's great.
When you're a little kid, because
you're listening to him and maybe Peter, Paul, and Mary. You know, there's certain kind of folk acts that make your, at least, for kids my age, that sort of worked their way into my ears. And then when you're a teenager, just the opposite. He's like Lawrence Welk. He's the uncoolest possible thing.
That's kind of my point. Like when you start really getting into music, you try to find something that feels kind of on the edge. Mm. Or it feels like it speaks to you and your generation. And then you get a little older and you realize John Denver's just great. Well, he's a really good singer. he'll take a song. Come on. Country Roads is beautiful. Rocky Mountain High is beautiful. He sang Annie's song. Beautiful. He did all these wonderful songs.
He does these beautiful, wonderful songs, but I'll say this. He's really easy to make fun of. He's really easy to parody. Did you ever hear a Chevy Chase's John Denver riff?
No.
Where I think it's called In the Rockies or Colorado. It's called Colorado.
Okay.
We're going to Colorado. And he ends up talking about how the Yeti kidnapped Blanche. And it's... they had an avalanche and had to start eating each other to survive, that kind of thing.
But here's the thing,
in the John Denver style.
But John Denver would be the kind of person where if a punk kid came up to John Denver, it's like, you're a sellout, man. Mm. Yeah, you should be a punk rocker or something like that. He'd be like, well, that's really nice. Thank you for your criticism. I'll take that into consideration. You just know that he would people wouldn't know what to do with him if you actually did confront him that.
In terms of personality, he's Ned Flanders.
Yeah,
he's the Ned Flanders of country music
without the edge.
Yeah. Would you like some milk? Oh no, it's after 5. That kind of thing.
And John Denver, he by the time this pilot came out in 1988, he'd been a hit singer for around 2 decades, I think, at least. At least since the early 70s. And he'd done some acting. Not a lot. Mm. He did some TV, a TV movie here and there, an episode of something or other. But
the Muppets.
We already covered the Muppets. Hold on. He was in some show that was on forever that I can't fucking remember. Let's see, what is it? Nah.
60 Minutes.
he was on. He was on MacLeod. He was on an episode of MacLeod.
Okay.
All right. So, totally fine. He was also the star of one of the most iconic comedies of the 1970s, Oh God, starring George Burns as God,
the Lord God Almighty. Yeah.
Yeah, and George Burns is he's God, and he said. Talks to John Denver. John Denver just doesn't know what to do with that. And they're like, am I going crazy? Is this God? Why would he talk to me? I'm not important. I don't have a mission. And it's just George Burns explaining the universe in kind of a whimsical way, driving John Denver a little batty. And it all ends in a court case in which George Burns has to prove he's God. And you know what? The movie's great. I have a lot of affection for Oh God. I'm also I'm also pretty fond of Oh God Book 2.
I've only seen the first one. No, which one? The one with the kid.
That's 2.
That's okay. So I saw that one on TV when I was young.
Yeah, I always
never saw the third one.
There's one line. A third one was "Oh God, you devil," in which George Burns plays the devil as well.
Yeah,
which is a fun trick. That movie's not great. I kind of like Oh God Book 2, not because the plot's nothing, but just because he has fun God stuff to say. There's a bit where she's like, hey, did you ever make mistakes? And he's like, yeah, I made mistakes. Math. It's too complicated. I don't know what I was thinking.
The one I remember was avocados. Made the pits too big.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the little girl says, oh, yeah, and giraffes. And he's like, what's wrong with giraffes? It's like, well, their necks are so long. It's so they can eat the leaves in the trees. And she says, well, why didn't you make the trees shorter? And he's like, why didn't I make the trees shorter? It's just fun. You could just idly chit chat with God, and they did a lot of fun stuff with it. And John Denver was kind of a perfect foil for that because he had again no edge,
yeah.
Just interest and kindness, and that's really really sweet. So casting him as a fucking FBI agent who has to like break people's arms and shit is so goddamn weird. The premise of the show, in a nutshell, we'll go through the whole thing, is John Denver is an FBI agent. He's stationed in Los Angeles. His old partner is played by the guy from Martin Cove.
That's right.
The evil karate instructor from The Karate Kid.
And many other things as well.
Hard-working actor.
Hugely long career.
I met Martin Cove once. He was really nice. He seemed cool. All respect to Martin Cove. But that's his best known role, let's be fair. But his partner had quit and had decided to move to Alaska, where he would fly small planes and make deliveries, which is a thing people would do. If you ever saw Northern Exposure, one of the characters in Northern Exposure had a similar gig.
Does this show have something to do with Northern Exposure? Maybe is this like reacting to the popularity of Northern Exposure?
No, Northern Exposure came out 2 years later.
You're fucking kidding me.
I'm not fucking kidding.
Oh my, I thought this was like a full-bore Northern Exposure knockoff.
Northern Exposure was a huge hit in the early 90s. Nobody talks about it anymore. It's about a doctor who...
It lasted like 9 seasons or something.
I know, but nobody talks about it. Yeah. But yeah, it was about a doctor. He graduates from college, but the only gig he can get is working in Alaska. So he moves to a small town in Alaska, and it's a small town show. And it was great. I found an interview with John Denver where he was just making this show. And they were just talking about, so he just filmed a pilot. And he was like, yeah, and it was really interesting, actually. And he was talking about how he wanted to do a TV show because if it got picked up, he could stay in one place for a while. Like, he could actually just move somewhere for, like, 5 years and not have to, like, travel around the world so much and just be with his family. So kind of bittersweet that this only lasted one episode. But he also talked about how the premise was his idea. He said,
He wanted to be a cop.
He wanted to be a pilot in Alaska.
Ah, okay.
So his whole thing was, there are no TV shows set in Alaska. It's an interesting place in the world. I'd love to do a show set there. And he was a pilot. He loved flying. Tragically, that's how he ended up dying in 1997. He was in he was in a plane crash. But he did love it. And so this reflects that. This reflects his love of small town living. So although he's not credited as a writer here, he did come up with the premise of, here's a guy who moves to Alaska to become a pilot and make deliveries. So at the beginning, he's an FBI agent. He quits after some business. We'll get into that. And he goes up to Alaska to be with his friend, but his friend is accidentally fallen in league with some ruffians. And so now he has to save the day. Basic premise. Presumably every week there would be another adventure involving rescues, delivering important goods, criminality, visiting dignitaries. He talked about how this is something that Sarah Palin would later make into a joke, unintentionally, I think, but like the idea that it was right next door to Russia.
Yeah, it was right across the Bering Strait.
And John Denver, as an entertainer, had actually visited the Soviet Union quite a few times. And he wanted to hopefully open up conversations about just how demonized both sides thought they were. And it's like, hey, we're all people, man.
Right.
And so he thought maybe there was going to be an opportunity to weave that in someday into the story. And it was interesting to see how invested he was in it. This wasn't a lark to him.
Mm.
Like, he really wanted this show to work. It didn't. In a practical level, because it didn't get picked up after the pilot. Also, the show's not very good.
Yeah.
But he really, really wanted it to work. So the show was John Denver's obviously the big star. Martin Cove is in the pilot. He would not be in the rest of it for reasons we will discuss.
He's the one who gets fridged.
Yeah, yeah. He's oh no, Martin Cove died, and now we have feelings. But the big actor who is probably going to be the co-star, I feel, was John Rhys-Davies.
Well, John Rhys-Davies was like the local sheriff,
yeah.
So I'm guessing he was going to be kind of an antagonistic figure.
Or a partner, maybe. I don't know where they were exactly
figured
they go with it.
That the an actor named Richard Masur, who you'd probably recognize him, he's also very prolific. I figured he'd be like the best friend that we'd see keep on coming back. Like, he'd replace Martin Cove.
But he was the bad guy in this episode.
he'd come back.
Just bring him, just all of a sudden Martin Cove's character is back, but it's not Martin Cove, it's just Richard Mazur.
Yeah,
okay. Is it Mazur or Mazur?
I always pronounce it Mazur. It could be Mazur. Okay. I apologize to him if he's listening.
If you're unfamiliar with Richard Mazur, mm-hmm. Mazur, he's a chill dude. He's actually like, it's weird to cast him as the villain, like the serious villain in anything. And the only reason I think it kind of works in this is because he's opposite John Denver. Compared to John Denver, he's got edge.
Yeah, he's tough compared to John Denver.
He's got serious edge next to John Denver. But so he's the main bad guy. But yeah, John Rhys Davies, he was Sala in the Indiana Jones movies. He was Gimli in Lord of the Rings, and he's been in everything. Mm-hmm. He was the first person to play the Kingpin in live action.
Okay.
Yeah, after the Incredible Hulk TV series ended, they did a couple of TV movies, and at least two of them were stealth pilots. I've actually been wanting to do them for a while. Stealth pilots for other live-action Marvel shows. One was a stealth pilot for a show based on Thor, except instead of like a normal guy, he hits a stick and he becomes Thor. He hits a stick and Thor just shows up, and it's like they're mismatched roommates.
Oh, which, weird. Okay.
There are worse ideas. It didn't quite work. But the second one was called The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. And that one was a stealth pilot for a Daredevil TV series. And he had, like, the same all-black costume that he would later have in the Netflix series. And John Rhys Davies played the Kingpin. And it's not bad. Honestly, it's not bad. It could have been a good show in the 1980s. Just didn't get... Nothing came of it. But he's a good get. He's already been in some really big movies. He's a respectable actor. He's got a lot of presence. Which may have been a miscalculation, because John Denver doesn't. Like, he's... Whenever he's, like, got to do anything kind of big, like, he has to, like, be a tough guy or, like, talk someone down, he's got a gun or whatever like that, it never feels right. It always feels like he was just handed some pages and has to say it.
The kind of inciting incident of the whole plot, it's the face-off in the mall.
Yeah, so he's been undercover trying to, like, expose, like, a money laundering ring, and this guy who was gonna launder his money, he ends up, like, just grabbing it and running.
And he's in a panic.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah he's just... in over his head, and so John Denver, like, chases him down, like, slides down an escalator and shit, and...
pause for a moment, and try to picture John Denver doing, like, action hero shit, like, sliding down an elevator, and then doing, like...
Escalator, excuse me.
And then doing, like, a hostage negotiation. Like, there's no hostage, but he's, like, negotiating with
he's got John Denver at gunpoint. And John Denver's like, you don't want to do this. Mm. It's okay, man. Hey, why don't you give me the gun? Hey.
No.
Hey. Now, it's like Charles Bronson's, like, little brother. Like, just like, hey, buddy. What if we just didn't?
What if we just didn't? Biff Kersey. Paul Kersey was Charles Bronson in Death Wish.
Yeah.
I think if I was in, like, a really serious crime situation, I was in over my head and I was panicking at a suitcase full of money clutched to my chest and I was holding a revolver.
Yeah.
And then John Denver was there. Mm. I just dropped them both and say, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, honestly, John Denver would be the greatest hostage negotiator ever. Because he would be like, okay, I can't be mad at John Denver. Mm. All right, man. I'll make you a deal. You sing Country Road for like two verses, and I'll leave.
Come on, just do the opening guitar riff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. No, let the hostages go and whatever is happening.
But he's got.
I don't know why I'm taking hostages, but
John Denver's got an asshole boss in this show, and he sees that John Denver's at gunpoint, and he just immediately shoots the guy. And John Denver's like, I had that.
Yeah.
I had that under control, and the guy's like, hold on, I wrote it down, hold on, what the fuck does he say? He says, I really need to get better notes. You don't have the right attitude anymore. And John Denver says, I've got the perfect attitude, pal. I'm out of here. Pretty much that's the delivery, and he quits.
Do you remember in the Shaft movie, the first one with Samuel L. Jackson,
John Singleton one. The good one.
The John Singleton Shaft movie.
That's a really good movie. I like that movie.
It's all right.
I like that movie a lot.
I prefer the original.
There's a scene in that movie where Shaft quits. I'm just going to talk about
this. This is what I'm going to talk about.
This is one of the this is the greatest scene of anyone quitting a job in movie history, by the way.
Shaft, he doesn't just quit. He's in the courtroom with the bad guy, who is Christian Bale.
Yeah, and he's rich and white, and justice has not been served.
Yeah, and everyone's furious. Yeah, everybody's furious. The judge says, well, on a technicality, you get to go, rich white guy. And John Shaft is in the back of the courtroom in his long black coat. He's holding his... he's wearing his badge around his neck.
Yeah.
And the judge bangs their gavel, and John Shaft becomes a vigilante instantly. F all this.
Declares it in public.
He rips off his badge, and like a ninja star, flings it across the whole courtroom.
Yeah.
It lodges in the wall behind the judge. The judge narrowly wheels around. Him. Yeah.
Oh my god. It's the best.
It's like one of the corniest, but also like most dramatic thing. John Denver. Like, if you could get a molecule of that, it would have been okay. Yeah. John Denver's just like, no, man, I'm going.
Yeah. Maybe you don't have the right attitude for this job.
I don't have the right attitude. I'm out of here. Okay? Pick up some coffee on the way back. Like, it's like...
I'm not going to be a dick. I'll catch you with coffee.
Where are you going?
Well, he's going to Alaska. Yeah. That's his whole thing.
I'm going to Alaska. So he goes to Alaska.
Yeah. And there's a theme song where he sings Higher Ground. There was a whole album called Higher Ground that he released.
I'm not sure if it was a tie-in...
Well, I mean, the song was written for the show. I do know that.
Hold on, let me look up when Higher Ground came out, because I don't know if that was...
The show was in 1988, and I think the album was around the same time. I could be wrong.
Higher Ground album.
Yeah. But there's this long...
Not Barbara Streisand's Higher Ground.
It's a long, long, long opening credit sequence of John Denver in a light airplane, you know, with the pontoons at the bottom so they can land in the water. And he's just flying around Alaska. Ah, look at that. He sees a bald eagle flying in the air and, like, neat. And then just keeps on flying. The implication is that he, like, flew a Cessna from Los Angeles to Alaska.
Mm.
I don't know. I assume you need to refuel at least once.
Refuel, like, 8 times, I'm sure.
That's a long journey.
I'm no pilot. I've never flown a Cessna. But I know it's not a long-range vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you need a commercial airliner.
You could probably do it, I assume. I'm just saying, I assume you would have to stop a bunch of times. So it's probably a little less exciting. Like, we cut to him, like, flying Alaska, and it's great, but we miss the part where he has to, like, gas up in Portland, and gas up in Seattle, and gas up in the left side of Canada.
What province is on the left side of Canada, William?
Saskatchewan?
It's British Columbia.
British Columbia. The one that's the furthest away from Britain. Weird. It's been a long time since I took a geography class. I have no apologies whatsoever.
Well,
I've forgotten most of the state capitals. It doesn't come up very often.
There are so many fewer Canadian provinces than American states. We as Americans should know all the Canadian provinces.
I don't expect any Canadian to know all 50 states off the top of their head. I don't expect all Americans to remember them off the top of your head. You can forget a Dakota. I'll let it go.
You can forget a Dakota.
Yeah, you know, Dakota and the other one. Bum.
There are 10 provinces, okay? Yeah. We can remember 10.
This is no disrespect to Canada. This is my bad memory for geography. I want to make this abundantly clear. If you ask me, like, what's like south of Germany? Mm. I would be like, I don't know.
Austria.
Greece? Okay. Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. Why not?
No, that's what's south of Germany.
I'm willing to believe you.
Okay. Austria, it's down there.
Yeah, it's down there, somewhere.
It's like over to the side there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And there used to be another country over there, but we can't find it anymore, called Lostria.
I hate you. Americans. Look, I understand Americans suck at pretty much anything that has to do with the rest of the world.
Yeah, education.
We don't speak other languages. Yeah. We're very bad at geography. We don't pay attention to world history. We barely pay attention to our own.
Yeah.
We
pick our battles when it comes to education.
We pay attention to kind of like this mythic version of our own history.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we know a lot about sort of fake stuff about
George Washington and the cherry tree.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah, they teach you that, like, it's important.
In schools, in elementary schools.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. It one of my biggest pet peeves is when a movie or a TV show will just make up a country.
Oh,
yeah. This takes place in, like, this nation. It's like, that's not a country. Yeah. I've looked at a map.
There's a reason sometimes you might want to do that, because you're going to paint the country in just a flat-out evil light.
Yeah, and you don't want it.
You don't want it. You don't want to just pick on,
how about this?
Bulgaria. Like, come on.
Maybe as Americans, we don't need to come up with another country to be an enemy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But they don't want to do that, though. Ever since we lost the Soviet Union as our go-to just villain in movies, we've been looking for just generic faceless evil. I mean, look at Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, we don't know what country that is.
They don't say it in the original Top Gun either. That one was easy. You could have said it was fucking Russia. No, it's just this one evil country. Yeah, the bad one. With the Death Star trench? Just naturally formed Death Star trench, just in case.
Oh gosh, what if that was Canada?
Anyway, they wouldn't need an aircraft carrier to get there.
On the west coast of Canada, if you're traveling up the coast, you leave Washington State, which is the northernmost part of the west coast of the United States.
Yes.
You go into British Columbia.
Nice.
And then above British Columbia is...
Alaska?
Not quite.
The Northern Territories?
Not the Northwest Territories. What's in all of, like, the Gold Rush stories?
Gold?
The Yukon Territory.
Oh, okay.
Go through the Yukon.
I suppose it's not always gold in those stories. they don't all end happy. And then, with an old man in a beard going, gold!
And you keep traveling up and you hit Alaska.
Yeah. Anyway, John Denver hits Alaska, and he shows up and
he drops bombs on British Columbia as he goes along.
Stop it.
No, he doesn't do that. He's not.
No, he loves everybody. He goes there, and Martin Cove's just like, neat! My friend is here. Yeah, everything's going to go well.
I don't think they ever explain, like, just their friends.
No, they used to be partners. Like, he used to, like, work in the FBI. There's this really fucking weird scene where Martin Cove shows up. He's visiting L.A. and he thought he'd stop by and see John Denver. John Denver also, like, kind of invested in his company, like, actual money. But he's cool. He doesn't want a bag or anything like that. He's just like, yeah, you know, we're connected. But when Rick, Martin Cove's character, shows up at the FBI headquarters, that asshole boss who fires John Denver in a couple of scenes says, "Where's your pass, Rick? Everyone not currently in the bureau needs a pass!" And he, like, runs into his office to get a pass, and I'm like, pick your battles, Ted. Like, we're past that. Alright, fine. Anyway, but he gets there, Martin Cove is there. Martin Cove has a son named Tommy, and Tommy just wants to go fishing with his dad. But his dad's super busy trying to make sure they don't die of starvation and have a roof over their heads. What a monster.
Tommy's a generic boy child. Doesn't have much to do contribute.
Only thing that kid ever acted in.
Is this?
Yeah. Usually when you see, like, a kid in these things, you're just like, oh, what other movies was this child actor in? And they're usually in other stuff. They were in an episode of Star Trek or something. Mm-hmm. Nope, this one's the only one for that guy. Fair enough.
But he has a wife who has more to do in this.
Yeah,
story,
he has a wife named Jenny, and she's played by, I think it's Meg Whitner. Meg Whitner plays Martin Cove's wife, and she's kind of the stick in the mud at the beginning because she's talking about, like, dude, we can't hire anybody. We don't have the money for that. We're actually not doing that great. Like,
she actually brings a lot to the story.
She does. She does.
Like, just in terms of the attitude and the suspicion and. Like, she's the emotional crux of all of this.
Yeah.
John Denver is way too laid back to seem like determined cop guy, even though it's like, you messed up in L.A. Yeah, well, did you? He was so laid back about it.
Yeah, he
didn't feel like he screwed something up. He just felt like
he was the one who didn't kill a guy. Yeah. Like, what are we... So, but yeah, Jenny is... Martin Cove is, like, kind of like the wide-eyed dreamer who thinks we can just make this work and we just have the right attitude. And she's like, I'm looking at the books, we're not paying the bills. Mm. And he's just like, why do you gotta be a bookkeeper all the time? Because someone has to! Like, the business side of their relationship is not great.
Yeah.
Because they have those responsibilities. Martin Cove is in business with Richard Mazur. Basically, Richard Mazur is, like, investing in, like, vacation homes, but they'd be, like, isolated enough that the best way to get them would be by plane, and Martin Cove's kind of getting on the ground floor of that, but right now he's doing a lot of, like, little jobs. Like, there's a bit early on where he's going to deliver antifreeze to this remote location, okay, right? Yeah. So, okay, it's a useful thing. It's very cold up there. You have engines and stuff. I'll bring the antifreeze. And then he goes up there, and he realizes, he's actually delivering bootleg whiskey, and this is a dry town or county.
And there's some parallels where John Denver like finally figures out that this is there's bootlegging going on.
Yeah,
and he says
This is so reductive.
It's like when watching Cartoon All Stars to the Rescue and Bugs Bunny picks up a joint and says, "Look, marijuana." And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
First of all, I know you know what marijuana is, Bugs Bunny, but
the kids don't need to know that you know.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's like we know what you and Daffy are doing, you know, behind the club afterwards, but. But yeah, hearing John Denver talk about, in L.A. it's cocaine. You don't know what cocaine is, John Denver. You're not allowed to know what
cocaine
is. He's
had a Coca-Cola.
caffeine-free diet, maybe. In L.A. it was cocaine, here it's bootleg booze.
Yeah, I was actually part of the sting operation to tear down New Coke. Like, it was just... You're welcome. Tried to bring in a whole shipload of New Coke into Los Angeles. Put a stop to that.
Couldn't have that nonsense.
So yeah, they treat. I don't really know like if there are specific laws, because Alaska is actually a very interesting place. Like it's very remote. There are people who get like stipends to live there, like from the government. And of course, you know, they have the Northern Lights thing where there's a lot of people. Not Northern Lights. What do you call it? The 30 days a night thing where, like, you can have, like, nights that last weeks and weeks and weeks and days and
Northern
et cetera. Insomnia was about this as well. So there's a lot of interesting sort of particular eccentricities or unusual circumstances that you could absolutely play with for a show in Alaska. Did you see the new True Detective, Night Country?
I haven't seen any Jody True Foster. Detective, yeah.
Yeah. That one takes place in Alaska during perpetual nighttime. And it's very moody. It was good. I like that season a lot. So Martin Cove finds out that he's been bootlegging, and he doesn't want any part of this. He gets really...
Weirdly really, righteous about
really
it.
Really John Denver-y about it all of a sudden. This was a good detail. He brought oranges with them, and they're like, that's like gold here. We don't get oranges. It's a very tropical fruit. That works. But, hold on, what is it? I really need to get my notes. Okay. He basically was just like, I don't like breaking laws and I don't like lawlessness. And it's like, okay, man.
What do you like? Warm sweaters and cocoa. Yeah.
And Richard Mazur is just like, well, you don't like the laws that you know I've been breaking and you don't want to be associated with my lawless behavior. But that's okay, man. Hey, listen, why don't I just send you on one more mystery run out into the middle of nowhere? And Martin Cove's like, that's better. And so he gets in his plane.
Yeah.
It's like,
nothing suspicious at
all. You've never seen any movie before. My God. So he flies off, and sure enough, he doesn't come back. They go to find him. John Denver finds his body. And it's like, and he's in his plane. And, now we meet John Rhys-Davies, and he's investigating the murder. He's also investigating the bootlegging. And John Denver is like, maybe you should do some tough cop stuff. And John Rhys-Davies, I love what he says. He says something like, that's such a temperate climate way of thinking. He's like,
right.
What if we put them under constant surveillance? And like, in the forest? Who do you want to stake out the forest that's the size of New Mexico? What's your plan, John? And he's right. It's the different situation. There's different practicalities involved.
Clearly, look, we've been looking for Bigfoot for a while. John Rhys-Davies, he's a British actor.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen him in many, many things.
Just he's been a ubiquitous character actor, And I interviewed him as well. He seemed really cool.
I remember reading an interview with him where he was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, big, mm-hmm. huge blockbuster.
Yeah.
Still watched to this day. And he realized that he kind of started to resent how popular the movie was after a while.
Okay.
Because that's the only credit of his that people would mention, even though it's hundreds. It's like, you know, I can do more. I'm not more than just my character from Raiders of the Lost Ark. But then he would, like, go to conventions and stuff, kind of resent it. It's like, this is a paycheck. I hate doing this.
But you become known for only one thing when you're like, a varied actor. And
I'm an actor. I don't want to just sit here at a table and sign pictures of one character. And then he kept on going enough that after the 1,000th person says what you did in that one movie meant a lot to me, he's like, wait a minute, maybe what I did in that movie meant a lot to people.
Yeah.
So he kind of embraced it after a while and became just like, you know what? I'll just come back and I'll do it. I'm a little bit more at peace with it.
You get zen.
He usually comes with, prepared. Mm-hmm. He's professional.
Mm-hmm.
He's not bringing a character this time.
No, he's a cop.
He plays just sort of a generic cop. He's not doing a voice. He's not really doing a character.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he understands his role is just functional.
And it's actually a shame because I really do feel like there was plenty of room to give him something.
Well, here's
the
thing.
One little thing. One
twist.
We
have John Rhys Davies. He can be big. He can give a big performance.
Yeah, even an underwritten role. And I've seen him do a lot of junk. He can bring it to an underwritten role.
I've seen, he's done a lot of like B-movie crap and he will act up, but I think only if he wants to.
Yeah.
And I feel like we needed him to do that here.
Yeah.
Because he's acting opposite John fucking Denver.
Yeah.
Who is way too downbeat for this story. We need somebody to bring a little bit more emotion and rage. I think that's why I liked Martin Cove's wife so much.
Yeah.
She's the one who's bringing a little bit of humanity to the story.
There's an issue, though. There's a thing that we used to say in the theater, which is you're only as good as your weakest link in the cast. So, like, if everyone's, like, on, like, the same acting level, same level of expertise, same level of confidence, but one person with a significant role doesn't have that. They're new, or they're just taking this for course credit in college or something, and that's now as good as the acting gets.
Yeah,
you're either acting over them, you're just running over them, and the play looks bad because they're clearly being outshined, or you lower your intensity to match theirs.
Yeah.
And then the whole play is just kind of eh. This is how I felt watching Steven Spielberg's West Side Story.
Oh?
Yeah, which is
because Tony is kind of a weak link.
Yeah. Tony is a huge weak link in that movie. Like, that's a really good version of West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
Beautifully photographed. The acting's really, really great. Rachel Zegler's really, really great. Mike Faced is really, really great. Ariana DeBose is really, really great. And then there's that guy.
It was Tony, one of the main characters.
Yeah, like literally one of the two main characters. And they went above and beyond, actually. They added stuff to his character to make him more like a tortured James Dean type.
Yeah.
Like, I killed a guy in like a fight or something like that, and now I'm trying to make amends. So he's got this little extra twinge of darkness that he didn't have before. Like, they gave it to him in the material. And then Ansel Elgort is just like, sup? And like, can he sing? A little. Can he dance? No. and so every time someone's around him, they look like they're overshadowing him a lot. And it's distracting. Is it so distracting that it makes it a bad movie? No. Does it keep it from being as good as it could possibly be? Yes. I think absolutely. And that's John Denver. Sure.
Well, and he's the lead.
And he's the lead. And he's going to be the center of the show. So I feel like everyone's got to match that. So John Rhys Davies can't be too big because then it's the John Rhys Davies show.
There's something that some actors do where, without even really thinking about it, they match the energy of their scene partner.
Yeah, it's quite common,
I'm going to go out on stage. I have this idea of what I'm going to do, but all of a sudden Tom Hardy is on stage with me. It's like, okay, I'm going to be bigger because I'm going to match Tom Hardy. He's an intense actor.
Tommy Lee Jones did that in Batman Forever. He wanted to try to compete with Jim Carrey's energy.
He kind of matched Jim Carrey, or at least he tried. And that was a terrible decision for
the character. Really should have played the opposite, I think.
We need to balance the straight man
to Jim Carrey.
I feel like we need a balance for John Denver. And the only way to balance John Denver is to be big and actorly, because he's not an actor.
Yeah.
John Denver can read lines, but he can't really emote in sort of the large way a cop, kind of the melodramatic way, I should say, that a cop show requires.
Well, there's a couple of different ways you could have done that. You could give him, like, maybe a more hard-boiled, grizzled, I've seen it all here in Alaska kind of type.
Mm.
Or you could go the Andy Griffith Show type and give him a Barney Fife.
Yeah.
Where he has, like, a guy who's a bigger, but he's also maybe, an amateur, maybe kind of a coward, and that way John Denver looks bigger compared to this guy.
Uh-huh.
And then that helps. On the other hand, that can also be really cloying if you don't get it just right.
Yeah.
Oh my God, have I seen some bad fucking cop movies and shows where it's just like, the one Simon Says with Dennis Rodman, where Dane
that's a movie, not a TV show.
Oh yeah, but it is. But it's the same. It's the same thing though, where they gave him a comedy sidekick.
Uh-huh.
But it was played by Dane Cook.
Oh no!
But it's '90s Dane Cook, and someone clearly told him, "We can't afford Jim Carrey. You're Jim Carrey now."
Oh no!
And he is desperately hamming it up throughout that. It's not a good movie anyway, but it's kind of like fun in like a lo-fi kind of way. It's got cyber monks, and it's hard to be mad at a movie with cyber monks. But then it's got Dane Cook doing Jim Carrey shtick, and it's awful. It's just nails on chalkboard bad. So it's a balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a balance. In any case, they're dealing with the fallout of this. They're like, the family is kind of going to get kind of like run out of town. Richard Mazur technically owns one of their two planes, so he comes to collect. And he says, "Listen, you know, I'm a really good guy, and I totally didn't kill your husband, wink. But he wasn't paying off this plane, and with him not working, I need the plane back." And his like repo guy like walks up to the plane and like shoves the little kid down, and that's when John Denver springs into. That's when John Denver lightly walks into action. Just
nothing springy about like, John
sort,
Denver.
Sort of walks towards him at a slightly brisker pace, and then he like grabs his arm, and the guy goes, "Ow, my arm! No, really, John Denver is hurting me, I swear!" And John Denver is just like, "Yeah, don't do that stuff." And
you'll
he's
get
like,
more
"Oh,
of
man.
The same.
Oh no, okay.
Are you all right?
You're good, right? Okay, cool. Yeah.
Let's go back to the ski lodge, and I'll sing a song for it." Which he does.
He does. There's a little party, and he sings a song about how great Alaska is. Fine. It's John Denver. It'd be weird if he didn't sing. Cool.
I'm guessing he would sing, like, one song per episode, right?
At least once in a while. I don't know if you have to do it every episode, but yeah, you'd want him to sing.
That's why you hire John Denver.
One of the reasons why you hire John Denver, yeah.
To which I would ask, I know John Denver's pretty prolific songwriter.
Oh, he's done a ton by that.
Would he do one of his old songs? Would he just sing songs from Higher Ground, the record?
I mean, I think you'd probably save the big stuff for special episodes.
I would think at some point you'd start just playing stock music that he wouldn't sing, or they just abandon that conceit after a while.
You're not going to do that every single... the episode was running short material.
Yeah.
Or it's a love scene and he's got a guy, "Hey, Jenny, I know your husband just died 3 episodes ago, but there's no other women in the show, so... loving you is really good in Alaska." Kermit taught me that one. And
loving you really good in Alaska.
I want to see a special episode where like Miss Piggy is like a spy, a Soviet spy.
Oh, that'd be so great.
And then we never talk about it.
One of the characters is Miss Piggy.
Just one of the characters is played by a Muppet. Like, every couple of episodes, just a random Muppet plays another character, like a random celebrity would be in an episode of Fantasy Island. It would be great.
That would be freaking awesome.
That would be the most amazing show ever, am I right? Anyway, their plane is getting repossessed. They can't buy gas anywhere. They're in a lot of trouble. And then, meanwhile, there's a group of kids, Native American kids, teenagers, who are drinking the booze. So, you know, we're in trouble. But they're also kind of involved in all of this criminal rigmarole with Richard Mazur's character. And one of them is kind of like off in the woods, and he sees a guy who was kayaking who was injured. And he calls it in, even though he's supposed to be like keeping it on the down low. And John Denver... he's the one who's closest. So he takes his plane, and there's a whole sequence. Can he land this plane on an Alaskan river? Yes. And then he saves the kayaker. And I honestly thought this was going to be a trap. Like, he's going to get there, and the kayaker's, like, already dead.
Oh,
and there's,
yeah,
like, a couple of thugs there, and he's got to beat him up. No.
No, it's just an adventure.
Yeah.
I'll say this. This is a John Denver cop show. You would think that they would have blown their budget on getting John Denver. Because surely he fetches a high price. He's you know, famous country star.
I'm sure he's getting paid something. Yeah.
I appreciate that this show brought the production value.
Yeah.
They were really filming Alaska, which was Canada.
Yeah.
But
I believe it was mostly shot in Vancouver. They might have done some second unit in Canada. I don't know.
But they did out into the hills or out into the woods.
There's definitely a real river there. Nice. They shot real planes. There's some cool plane photography, actually. Like some, you know, sweeping around.
I have a weird weakness for, like, B movies and TV shows that make a lot of their flying scenes.
Yeah.
It's like they're kind of bragging a little bit. We have a moment to breathe. I think that's one of the reasons I like those Andy Sedaris movies, because we have a Cessna. We're going to film Cessna. The fuck out of that thing.
Best one ever of those is a Charlie Varick. Remember Charlie, at the end of Charlie Varick.
Walter Matthau movie.
Yeah, yep. Walter Matthau. It's a great fucking Walter Matthau movie. Walter Matthau was a bank robber, and he robs a bank in the middle of nowhere, but what he doesn't realize is that was like a drop point for the mob, so all the money he stole was mafia money, and the mafia sends, after Walter Matthau, Joe Don Baker. Now, Joe Don Baker is a bit of a punchline. He didn't make a lot of good movies. He's really good in Charlie Varick. I don't know if it was written for him or what. He's perfect for the material. He's really intimidating. And Walter Matthau, this is before he became like mostly a comedy guy in like the 90s. He's actually like a really tough guy role. And it concludes with Joe Don Baker trying to catch. It's like in a chase with Walter Matthau, and Joe Don Baker is in like this like Studebaker, like his giant car, and Walter Matthau is in a light plane, and Joe Don Baker is like trying to like hit his plane with his car to prevent him from taking off, and it's like real fucking stunt work. It's like really impressive. It's cool, man. John Denver doesn't do that. He saves the kayaker, and everyone's like, "Gee, thanks, John Denver. We almost lost one of our kayakers. You know, we only get so many." So. That's nice. Meanwhile, Tommy's getting beat up at school because everyone thinks his dad was a bootlegger. And you know how like kids hate the idea of like, you know.
I have always hated the way bullying is depicted in movies because it's never like accurate to the way bullying actually functions.
Pretty
in a
rare.
Schoolyard.
Pretty rare. Pretty rare. Yeah. It's weirdly like, it's weirdly personal. In my experience, I was bullied a lot as a kid, as you might have guessed. It's like they find the thing that you're insecure about. Mm. And sometimes it's obvious, you know, like, I don't know, like I was a chubby kid. I got made fun of for that for a while. But then they would also be like, "Hey, you always play with your hair that one particular way when you're nervous." And I was like, "Yeah, well, we can get months of material out of that." And I'm like, "No, I'm self-conscious about that." And it's like, ah. But Aaron's always just like, "Yeah, your dad committed a cool crime that got everyone booze, but they couldn't get it." You know, like in like the 20s, you always heard about kids being bullied because everyone had cool speakeasies. And it's just like, "Ah, I heard on the radio. Booze was bad. You big jerk." Like, I don't know. Anyway, so John Denver is just like, and so Jim is John Denver's character. John Denver's character is going to clear Rick's name.
That's right. I haven't said his name yet.
Yeah, he's John Denver. He's going to clear Rick's name, and that's when Jenny says, "Don't make this your private war." And John Denver says, "This is my war." And it's like, okay, John, that's
fair.
Yeah, good take, John. We'll keep that one. Anyway, he like goes to find that one kid who like called in the kayaker because he realizes this kid's gonna save a kayaker. Hmm. Must not be all bad. Maybe he'd be willing to testify, talk about what happened to Richard Mazur, to Martin Cove. Sorry. So he goes. He flies into the woods and he meets a random guy there. And he's like, "Oh yeah, he's down that way, to the about 20 minutes that way, to the left." And John Denver's like, "Thanks, I almost got lost." And then there's like 3 minutes of John Denver walking in the woods, and occasionally we'll see like stock footage of a bear. It's like, oh no, he was in the same universe as a bear. Came so close. But he talks to the kid, and the kid's like, "Oh, I should probably help you in some stuff."
There really is just no danger.
No, not
at
really.
All. There's no threat. There's no danger. The only humanity we get is from the wife. Not even John Rhys-Davies, who's like kind of put upon, but not really.
He's Arch. He's just the tough cop, and he can play that.
No.
But she's the only one bringing any real reality to this. Yeah. Martin Cove did okay, but he's not in it very much. But yeah, this kid is just like, oh yeah, no, they're dealing booze off of this ship called the Lady Jane. And Don Denver's like, thanks, that'll get us to the end of the episode quite nicely. And he goes to that ship, and he's like, hey, I would like some booze, please. And they're like, hello, sir. Welcome in. Why don't you come downstairs where we're not going to kick you? And then they go downstairs, and then they trap him in the boat with all the booze. And I'm like, I don't know, man. You know,
downstairs where we're not going to kick you.
Just saying. But now he's trapped downstairs with all the booze. And I'm like, you know, he doesn't like the booze. Mm. At best, he's going to break it. Like, I would at least smash stuff, because I'm like, you know, if I can't have the booze, no one can. Psh, done. But, you know, the cops show up, and there's some fighting, and John Denver teams up with that one kid who helped, and they do some fighting, and the plane that was going to, like, carry all, like, the booze drugs, the implication is that there's also drugs. We never see it. It's always booze. I thought Richard Mazur was in this plane, by the way. It's kind of confusingly edited, but like the plane starts to take off, and then they're like, they shoot at the plane, and then it hits a tree and explodes.
Yeah.
And then then you see Richard Mazur, and it's just like, well, who the fuck was in that plane, and why did we care?
It was one of the kids, wasn't it?
Because there's the other kid turns out not to be that bad. Like, he sees that his, like, friend who was going to become a witness was, like, going to help him out.
But the older kid was okay. I thought the other kid was on the plane.
No, because he shows up and he's just like, oh, I can't believe you, like, betrayed me, pal. And he's just like, yeah, but you're working for, like, a rich white guy to destroy your community. And he's like, ah, shit, you're right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he helps John Denver at the end fight Richard Mazur to the death. Richard, again, this is like watching two teddy bears punch each other. It just doesn't have the intent. Richard Mazur's trying, by the way, but like, it's just, I'm sure John Denver was too, but it doesn't really have much impact. And then it concludes with that kid, and he like shot Richard Mazur. And that kid's just like, he's got a gun on John Denver. Like, yeah, I was working for Richard Mazur, and he almost killed my friend, and now I'm all trapped, and I don't know what to do, and I might as well just start shooting stuff. And John Denver's like, hey, man, what if you just don't? What if you just don't, man? And he tries to talk him down. Like, at the beginning,
almost literally what happened. Yeah.
And remember at the beginning of the movie when he tried to talk that guy down, but then someone shot that guy? Mm. Well, this time, someone doesn't shoot that guy. Mm. And that's not growth. That's not character growth. It's not even barely a callback.
Here's the thing. If John Denver were a good enough actor to show how hurt and outraged he was by the opening scene, then we could see how stressed out he was and horrified to be in a similar situation again. He'd have to face his former failing.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
That's good booking material.
At no point
does
it feel like the fact that this guy died kind of traumatized him a little bit, or the very least had an impact.
No, because he was so laid back about everything.
Yeah, I disapprove. Okay.
So he's in the same situation again, and that he was able to sort of change the outcome. That's fine writing. Mm-hmm. John Denver doesn't sell it.
No. What I got out of it, basically, was that the FBI agent who John Denver was working with, who shot that guy at the beginning... Mm. The parallel here is John Rhys-Davies' character, and he's off on the sidelines. He's got a gun. He's watching this. Mm. But he trusts John Denver to do what's right. Yeah. And that's when I thought, like, you know, John Denver and him would team up. Like, the bond has been formed, that kind of thing. Like, we trust each other now. And there's a cute line, actually, John Rhys-Davies has, where he's just like, thanks for helping me catch all these bad guys, all the shootouts, the plane blowing up and everything. Now, if you really want to be a good partner, you come with the paperwork. And John Denver's like, don't do the job. And he's just like, ah, fuck, that's a lot of paperwork. Hmm. You have to actually explain everything that happened in the paperwork. And sometimes it's a TV show, so you're going to have to say some ridiculous shit. But anyway, so John Denver is now going to work for their plane company, and he's going to like live with Jenny and Tommy, and they're totally going to hook up later. They're going to be like, oh, it's too soon, but then like at the end of season one, they're going to be about to hook up, but then she gets like mauled by a bear at the last second.
No,
that's a big cliffhanger.
Her ex-husband comes back. Like, it has to be like a romantic subplot.
Yeah.
It can't be dramatic. It has to be
the last possible
personal
second. My ex-husband's here, and he's Tommy's real father. And
something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, but I thought we had a thing. No, I'm going to try to make it work with this new, and then they're apart for another season. Fourth season.
Oh yeah, you drag it out.
They finally hook up.
That's how TV shows work, basically. If they're not together at the beginning, you have to keep them apart as long as humanly possible until the show ends, or you realize the show isn't going to end for a really fucking long time and you have to do something different. Mm-hmm. And then you realize you fucked up and you have to undo it like Friends did like 8 times. So,
yeah. So at the end of that 4th season, they get married, but then they realize, oh, that was supposed to be the end of the show, but they get renewed for like 3 more seasons.
Yeah. So they have to do something else with it.
They have to split up, or one of them gets amnesia.
She dies, but then it turns out later that she was like in witness protection or some bullshit.
Yeah.
Big twist.
No, it wasn't canceled too soon. we're spitballing all of it. Here's the thing. The premise and the writing and the production value is all fine on Higher Ground. It's
middle of the road, but it works.
It's kind of a generic show, but it's totally functional.
Yeah.
And if you put a really good actor in the middle of that, who can really kind of bring a lot of personality to the show.
And when we're not talking Daniel Day-Lewis, we're talking like TV good, like David Hasselhoff. I can carry a show.
Hasselhoff. You know? Get your Magnum PI.
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah,
an actor just has a little bit of TV charisma.
Yeah,
who can really sell sort of the fish out of water thing. I'm from LA. Now I'm in Alaska.
Yeah.
I don't really know this, but I'm going to explore this new territory.
There's even something to be said for if you just want to lean into it. Mm. Like, I'm a cop. But I'm the really chill cop. Chill cop is a good idea for a show. I would watch Chill Cop.
But Chill Cop has to be surrounded by high-strung characters, so there's something to juxtapose him with.
That's true,
John Rhys Davies has to be really grumpy all the time, or the wife has to be mad at him all the time.
Yeah.
The little kid has to, like, either really hate him or be the only one who's on his side.
Yeah.
And there's, like, maybe...
Stronger relationships.
Yeah, and maybe there's, like... I think the show needed more supporting characters. Most of the characters
probably would add.
Most
that
of the
time.
Characters in the pilot were directly connected to the plot.
Yeah,
he didn't go to Alaska, and there wasn't this like whole panoply of charismatic people that he got to meet.
Yeah,
there was like a room full of people, but he didn't get to know any of them.
But again, that's something you can definitely do over the first few episodes after the pilot is introduced. Like, a few new characters.
The local shop owner, the local guy who lives in a cabin,
extra love interest, something. You know,
So the premise isn't solid yet. All we have is LA cop in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough characters, not a sort of a sense of home base.
Mm-hmm.
Just, we move from one place to another. And that's not really enough to carry a show. And really, and we've been making fun of him the whole time, John Denver's not enough. He can't carry a show.
Not this show. If he was like, let's do a little House on the Prairie kind of thing. Chillax kind of show.
Or I would picture something a little bit more like, might be a weird comparison, The Incredible Hulk, where he's just this sort of itinerant helper, this country musician who like goes from town to town and is like fixes people with his,
That's not bad. Or I could imagine him as like the dippy dad in a sitcom where he has all these like cool kids and know what to do with their dad.
Yeah.
He can play himself in that. I don't give a shit. The John Denver show? I'd watch that. But here's where we differ. I think it was canceled too soon.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because I want to see them try to wring 100 episodes out of this. I want to see them try so hard. I want to see them get to season 4, and it's like the 4th time we've done an episode about an evil circus that comes to town. Like, I want to see, like, oh no, there's a white wolf on the plains, and maybe the new guy is a werewolf. But no, actually, he's like just kind of hairy. Like, I don't know. Like, I just want, like, I want to see this show. I want to see them try to make it work for a really long time. And this is a personal preference. I realize no one else wants to see that show, but this is the kind of show that would like mysteriously keep going for a while because
this
the
Walker Texas Ranger phenomenon.
Maybe. And like, Don Walker is a bit more broad, but like, it's just one of those shows where it's just like, you know, the demo is consistent, and we can sell ads to them, and somehow we ended up with 100 episodes, and almost no one actually watched it, but now it will live forever in reruns on PAX, you know? And
okay.
I look sometimes at, like Tubi or whatever, where forgotten TV shows go to live.
to live again.
Yeah, like what was that one where Mr. T was a like a lawyer's legal aid. It was like T and Me or something. That's a real thing.
I remember the Mr. T animated series.
I watched that one.
I think it was just called like T and the T Teens.
No. Oh, no. You know what it was? It was T and T because the other lawyer... the other lawyer... Yeah, T... Okay, yeah, here we go. T and T. T.S. Turner T.S. Turner is a former boxer who was accused of a murder he didn't commit. Accused is misspelled on IMDb. All was lost, but thanks to public defender Amanda Taylor, with a T, he was proven innocent. Now he works as a private eye and, alongside Taylor, sets out to help those who can't defend themselves in and out of the justice system. So, there were 65 episodes. Over three seasons.
So we can't do that on Canceled Too Soon.
No, it sounds like it's up our alley, right? But this is the kind of thing that, like, this show would have been. It's like, you know what show, like, I think it lasted, like, two seasons, but I really, really, really wanted to do it. Like, I think I actually pitched you, like, what if we did this as a Patreon series where we just watched this show? Mm. 18 Wheels of Justice.
Oh, I remember 18 Wheels of Justice.
46 yeah. episodes. After testifying, I'm rating IMDb again. After testifying against the crime boss, an undercover agent's family is killed. Adopting a new identity as a trucker named Chance, he roams America, helping people while evading hitmen and pursuing the crime boss. Yeah. You know who played the crime boss? G. Gordon Liddy. That, yes. Look him up if you don't know who I'm talking about. You'll be surprised. Billy Dee Williams co-starred on that show. Holy shit. Anyway, Higher Ground. No, I think it was canceled too soon. But in like kind of a morbid curiosity way, I just want to see them try to make it work. And I would be really, really fascinated. Also, I want John Denver to get to settle down for a little bit. I kind of felt bad after watching that interview. I was like, dude, you should... You can chill. Because the interview was just like, you're going on tour right now. And he's like, yeah, because I just did this pilot. And if it gets picked up, I won't be able to tour for 5 years. So I'm doing one last one, and then I can settle down. And then it didn't get picked up. And I was like, oh, you have to tour forever. John.
Mm. John Denver's doing okay.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, I mean.
You know, he did fine for himself. He had a wonderful career.
Yeah.
Beloved. Great singer. People. There was a year, like a couple of years ago, where like five different huge movies used Country Road.
I thought he lived longer than he died in 97.
He died in 97. Yeah. That's way too young. And I remember at the time it was really devastating. Just came out of nowhere. And but yeah,
as you mentioned, you know what? Maybe people don't want to watch this because he's in Planes so much.
That's also kind of weird. And yeah. I actually forgotten exactly how he died when I started watching this, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. And then I looked it up like, yeah, okay. But nothing bad happens to him in a plane here, so you're not really confronting it. And he loved flying. He said it many times. He loved flying, so he got to do something he enjoyed. So I'm not going to begrudge him that.
Here's a fact I didn't know. He was born in Roswell, New Mexico.
No shit.
Yeah, I didn't know that about John Denver.
Way to go, John Denver. You're a cool guy.
But R.I.P.
R.I.P.
His ashes are in the Rockies, and he's where he lived in the Rockies. He liked the mountains, so yeah.
Yeah, well, bless him. Cool guy, good, great country singer. If you're unfamiliar with his music, or like you don't know if you know his music, just listen to some of this. Listen to it's normally I'd never suggest this. Listen to his greatest hits. Mm. You'll realize you know more than you think. He was a really really big deal. But yeah, Higher Ground. That's it for Canceled Too Soon. Next time on Canceled Too Soon. We talked about Jim Carrey a couple of times in this podcast. Let's do an early TV series starring Jim Carrey that is mostly forgotten now, in which he played an animator working at a wacky animation studio in the early 1980s called The Duck Factory.
I have heard the legends about The Duck Factory.
You never watched The Duck Factory?
No, it never sort of was available to me because I didn't have like cable TV whenever they were running it.
Yeah, cause when Jim Carrey became
huge, specifically in the year 1994, he had three hit movies in 1 year.
I think he was the first actor to have three movies that gross over $100 million in 1 year.
Yeah, and those were like, not his first movies, but yeah, those were like, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, mm-hmm. The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber.
Those all came out the same year. That's huge. And, one year, all of a sudden, he's the biggest star in the world.
And I was a big fan at the time. I was a teenager. Yeah. I just loved his physical comedy.
Still funny.
I just thought it was funny. And and that's when stuff like The Duck Factory started to come up. Go be sure to watch Once Bitten, the other things he was doing beforehand.
Yeah, a lot of Comedy Central or like E! Or whatever they just dug up The Duck Factory because they had like 13 episodes of a Jim Carrey TV series and they just re-air it.
And I was really interested in seeing it because I was very fond of The Mask and I was fond of Ace Ventura at the time. I was naive. Yeah, I wanted to see The Duck Factory. Now I get to.
Yeah.
Now's my chance.
It was a mid-season replacement, so I think it's about 13 episodes, and we're going to watch them, and we're going to talk about them in the next episode. of Canceled Too Soon. We're going to find out if the Duck Factory was canceled too soon. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for reaching higher ground with us. If you want to talk to us and stuff, we exist. We're on social media, at Critic Acclaim. I'm at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibel.
You can always email us. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. If we get a few more emails, we can do another episode of We've Got Mail. So by all means, send them in. We also have a P.O. Box if you'd prefer to contact us that way. Whitney, what is that?
Send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes, and if you want to listen to episodes of Canceled Too Soon a week early, you can head on over to Critically Acclaimed, the Critically Acclaimed Patreon, patreon.com/Critically Acclaimed Network. We try to release those episodes a week early. Sometimes it's not quite a week because it's a lot of TV watching sometimes, but you will get it early, and you get all of our new episodes ad-free, and you get a lot of exclusive shows as well, including our shows where we reviewed Star Trek, or we do commentary tracks, we do hangouts with our Patreon friends. We have archived shows where we reviewed every single episode of the Adam West Batman, every single episode of Firefly. There's a lot. There's a lot of exclusive material. Hundreds of episodes are on our Patreon page exclusively. So you get a bunch of it. And it's fun. And that's it. That's the end of a podcast. We did another one.
Yes, we did.
And you listened, and we're grateful.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, subscribe if you haven't already. That'd be cool. Anyway, bye. That's a wrap. We'll see you next season.